while the slavers screamed helplessly from the hillside. Then we stood off, Ballantyne scowling and vowing vengeance.
"It's too bad," says he. "The white-livered ruffians always take to the nearest shore, but we've chased them and brought off the slaves 2 or 3 times, because they never make a fight of it, the chicken-hearted scoundrels."
He stared back at the shore and the blazing vessel.
"Aye, they're well up in the rocks, the beasts. And you must be careful, you know. Chum of mine, Jack Ledgerwood, chased one gang too far, just a couple of months ago. They caught him, made an awful mess of him, poor old chap. Gad, if I could only lay hands on them!"
You know my opinion of heroics, and I'd not break sweat myself to save a parcel of handless niggers being sold into slavery, which is probably no worse than the lives they've been living in some desert pest-hole, and may well be a blessed change for the females, who find a billet in some Randy Bashaw's harem. I mentioned this to Ballantyne, and he blushed crimson and exclaimed, "I say!" A true blue Arnoldian paladin he was, pure of heart and full of Christian zeal, to cherish the weak and have a grand time cutting up the ungodly. But I ain't mocking him. Much. And I've a sight more use for him and his like than for the psalm-smiting holy Joes who pay lip service to delivering the heathen from error's chain by preaching and giving their halfpence to the Anti-Slavery Society, but spare never a thought for young Ballantyne holding the sea lanes for civilization, and Jack Ledgerwood dying the kind of death you wouldn't wish for your worst enemy. I've even heard him maligned like my old shipmate Brooke for taking a high hand and shooting first and hammering slavers and pirates and brigands like the wrath of God. Censure's so easy at a distance, but I've seen them on the frontiers. Schoolboys with the down still on their cheeks, doing a man's work and getting a seed boy's pay, and damn all thanks, and more often than not a bullet for their 21st birthday. Why, I'd just seen one, too young to vote, weighing 100 black lives in the balance, and deciding, in a couple of seconds, the kind of fearful question his reverend seniors at home would have shied a mile from. I think he was right, by the way. And I speak from experience, having shirked responsibility too often to count. But the Ballantynes and Ledgerwoods didn't. And if the slave trade has been swept off the face of the seas, it hasn't really been the work of reformers and statesmen with lofty ideals in London and Paris and Washington, but because a long-forgotten host of fairly feckless young Britons did it for fun. And you may tell the historians I said so. It's about 1,000 miles from Sinai to the Abyssinian port of Zula, and I supposed our frisky little steamer would cover it in no time. But it didn't. Halfway, the boiler sprang a leak, and it was the grace of God that we were off Jeddah at the time, for in those days it was the only place with a dam on the whole benighted Red Sea coast, being the port where the Muslim pilgrims disembark for Mecca, which lies a couple of days' march inland. Consequently, the place is a swarm with them, arriving and departing in every kind of boat, from Chinese junks and ancient steamers to feluccas and coracles. We had a consul there, and the navy were always on hand. They used the place as a rendezvous, with a supply depot and smithy, where our engineer was able to get his kettle mended. There's a place called El Golia in the deep Sahara, which they say is the hottest spot on earth. But I'll put my money on Jeddah, or anywhere else on the Red Sea, for that matter. We sweltered for days, and the bosun won a bet from the marines by frying an egg on the deck. The waterfront was a bedlam of boats, and the town itself was choked with a vast milling horde of pilgrims who turned it into a human ant-heap, with the heat and stench rising from it in choking waves, which I'll swear were visible above the famous white walls. I lay gasping under an awning, trying to ignore the deafening din of a million niggers shouting and wailing, as I leafed through an old copy of Punch, in which there was a rhyme about Britons in chains in Abyssinia, and a cartoon of Emperor Theodore as a thick-lipped Sambo, well wide of the mark, as I was to discover. Punch didn't think much of our expedition, and had a fine old grouse about War Office muddle, and the cost to the middle classes, which they said should be defrayed by nabbing Theodore and exhibiting him in a cage at the Egyptian Hall on Piccadilly at a shilling a time. If I was impatient of delay, Ballantyne was fit to burst. There were a couple of sloops like ours about to weigh anchor for some place down the Arabian coast, where our native spies had word of a great cargo of slaves coming from the African shore. And our young hero was like a baby.